Hello and welcome to episode 161 of The Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. This week, it's Joe, Craig, and myself. And since we all have kind of creative careers, today we're going to be talking about the democratization of creativity. By the way, Craig, today we're talking about the democratization of creativity, like digital creativity.
Okay, cool. Good to know where the topic is.
Yeah. We're going to talk about the republicanization of digital creativity.
That's right. I've actually got a huge wad of papers here prepared from my pre-show research.
Great, great.
This is Foley work, people. I got you. I got you, Craig.
Follow-up, guys. I have follow-up.
What did we say this time?
Last week. Well, it's funny because that's the episode that I wasn't on. And it's also the episode where I feel like, oh, this is stuff that I've been like looking into and I have thoughts on this. Because
so what you're saying is it's the episode that you weren't on that you should have been on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I shouldn't have been on the other episodes if we're being honest though.
Yeah. I've got a list so far that I'm compiling.
Is it just the episode numbers?
So far. Yeah.
Just one.
There was one last week that was,
No, I didn't have that much feedback, but I thought that it was really interesting how when our court systems were set up, photographic and media-based evidences weren't really a thing. And here a lot of people, not that you guys were freaking out, but a lot of people were freaking out about how it's like, we can't trust photos anymore. We can't trust videos. We can't, like, what can we even trust? And now, you know, it's getting easier and easier to fake various kinds of media. I thought it was interesting that we're just going back to where we were before media was invented. Like, it'll ultimately end up just being people's word in courts because we can't necessarily verify that a photograph or a recording or a video is real.
Yeah, but that's kind of a negative, wouldn't you say?
I suppose. Like, it was nice having for a while evidence that, well, I guess that's the tricky thing is like, it was kind of always possible to fake a lot of that stuff. Like Joe was talking about with photographs, you know, like double exposures, even before Photoshop existed and we were all shooting film. And the only people who could tell you, oh, that's fake were experts. And there were experts that were smarter than the courtroom experts. So
yeah.
I don't know. Now I guess it's just a level playing field, whereas before it was mostly level, but there were these weird, like, ultimate standards of truth that weren't as ultimate as non-experts thought they were.
Yeah.
So your follow-up was actually your follow-up, not someone else's follow-up.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Okay, cool.
Wow.
No, I was expecting like a smackdown from some listener. It's usually one with a someone with a PhD who has words of wisdom to share.
Typically my Smackdown follow-up comes from me, and typically it's about me.
Oh, you guys have some listeners that are smarter than you?
Oh yeah.
Wow. That must be weird. It'd be weird.
In fact, we at one stage this show was described as Ben explaining technology to Craig. So some people even perceive that we have certain hosts that are vastly more intelligent than others, but I think it was really just the language barrier early on.
Yeah. What's a megabyte? Oh, you mean a megabyte.
I'm not Cockney British though.
Hello, governor. I'm just trying to speak to him.
Translator. We need a translator.
All right, so why don't we dive into our main topic, which is, as I mentioned,
I would before, if I knew what it was.
The democratization. Craig, I'm going to cut that. The democratization of digital creativity. And as we record this, Joe, you are using some of the democratized equipment to record, am I right?
Yeah, I'm using what is most accessible to third world nations.
Audacity.
nearly $1,000 iPad Pros.
Oh, I see.
Yay, democracy.
It's available a bit cheaper now, but yes.
No, yeah, yeah, exactly. I, honestly, what I'm using, I am recording on an iPad and a cheap Behringer interface, and then connecting that to an incredibly cheap microphone. And you know, my whole setup, including the iPad, if you didn't have an iPad and wanted to just get a, you know, standard 2017 iPad, which would do everything that I'm doing right now, would be under $400.
Or even honestly, everything. Like an
if
iPad
you
or two.
Had an iPad, then the setup would be that. Yeah. Well, sure.
Yeah.
Those aren't much cheaper than the cheapest iPads right now, though.
Mm. Well, and there's rumors of a new mini coming out too. We'll see what that costs.
Yeah. Yeah, I always like that screen size.
I love my iPad mini. It's the best thing to ever happen to the iPad.
They're fantastic.
Maybe apart from the iPad Pro,
the mini 2. The mini 2. If you have the 2, it's not bad.
I think it's the 3 or 4. Maybe.
Yeah.
It's only a couple of years old. It's good.
Yeah, I
the
have
mini
one
4
of those.
Is not bad. That's a good little device.
But essentially what we're talking about here is the 2017, so you said 2000, or is it the 2018?
2017 is what it is.
Okay. The 2017 iPad has the ability to work with the Apple Pencil, the original Apple Pencil.
Right. And it's got the A10 chip. It's got a fast chip in it. It's got the Apple Pencil support.
But what that does is it brings this concept of like a Wacom Cintiq, which is like a $2,000 device, down to a level where if you bought one of these used and an Apple Pencil used, you're probably talking about less than $300, like $350 is the max there. Which is really cool for people who want to pursue digital art, and you can also use it as your computer. You know, Joe's using it to record.
Right.
I think I'm bringing this topic up because all of us here recording right now are digital creatives, you might say, even if that term makes you want to throw up. We are people who produce creative work digitally. And when we got started with this, there were free tools and free things that you could, and cheap things that you could use. But honestly, most of them were bad. And if you wanted to do work professionally, maybe you could use those to start learning, but eventually you needed to pirate Photoshop or buy it.
Yeah.
And that's just not the case anymore.
I remember trying to use GIMP and being like, okay, I'm going to give this a red hot go.
Oh my God.
People say you can do the same thing as Photoshop. So I can't afford Photoshop. So I'm going to give it a go. And I just couldn't, I couldn't even, I was like, how do I save things? I can't even open a new document, let alone,
you know,
do anything cool.
If you want to not use InDesign, what you need to do is get something called Scribus. And I think it's a freeware. It's like the GIMP for InDesign. It's like InDesign.
Oh, great. GIMP.
Is that a LaTeX?
I think I've seen this actually. Yeah.
I think it's called Scribus. Yeah. I don't know where beyond that it goes, but it's supposed to be like this, and it does work. It's a Quark Express / InDesign.
Oh, okay.
Kind of replacement, it's freeware, but it is the most, like, there is no way you will intuit anything with this. You have to go through some tutorials, or you will never even like be able to open a file. It's like, and my wife wanted something that would do that sort of layout stuff. I said, well, this will work, but we just have to give you some time to sit down and go through some tutorials, or you will never get it. There's whoever did the UX on this thing was drunk or crazy or both.
I remember I started doing 3D work. I'm actually seeing a lot of it in my Facebook memories, because I started doing 3D stuff around the time that I got a Facebook account, like 2007. And I was using Blender because it's free. And Blender is a
weird...
How
did you go with that?
What's that?
How did you go with that? I'm intrigued.
Blender's a weird, like, crazy, crazy powerful application. Like, in terms of feature set, it definitely competes with like the $3,000-$4,000 software out there. But the interface is
not good.
You right click to select things. Like right from the get-go, you right click to select things. Actually, a lot of it is built for power users. Like once you know it, the interface is really nice because I actually prefer it now to I'm kind of migrating from Cinema 4D back to Blender because of Blender 2.8, which is the new version where you left click to select.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And they've changed a lot about the interface and made it a lot clearer. And it's also easier coming back into it, having learned a lot since then. But yeah, learning Blender. Go ahead.
No, that's right. Learning Blender.
Learning Blender was basically trying to learn 3D software on hard mode. And it worked out well enough for me because...
So if you fail to learn it once, it just deletes all your files.
Learning 3D at all is kind of learning on hard mode. That's true. Like for a little.
I remember when I was first trying to learn Blender, I got a USB keypad to attach to my laptop because having a 10 key for navigation is so helpful with Blender. If you don't have it, you're like, what do I do now? I actually got a USB keypad for that. It was hilarious.
Well, but actually, like, the way that they use the 10 key is really, really nice. Like I've yet to find 3D software that like makes navigating the viewport that easy, or that maybe it's not easy, but that quick. Blender is really good at shortcuts.
And I must admit, like I started in Maya for 3D when I was at university. That was my sort of introduction to 3D animation. Got pretty fairly comfortable with that and then sort of worked in a place where they were using 3D Studio Max. So I kind of straddled that line for a little while. And then it was the same thing. I was like, if I ever want to do this outside of a business where they're paying for software, I'm going to need some other solution. So I tried Blender and it was just like, it was like, if you knew all the keyboard shortcuts, you could do stuff. But until you knew every single keyboard shortcut, I felt like I was constantly just trying to look back at a reference book, like which button do I press to get this thing selected, or you know what I mean? So like, it's like learning a new language before you can do anything that kind of really is useful. That's kind of how I felt about it. So I've always liked the idea of open source software, or software that's way cheaper that enables anyone to get up and running. I even bought a book called Character Animation in Blender, and I was determined to do these tutorials until I could build, you know, human looking characters in Blender. And I think I got like three chapters in and was like, this is taking way too long. I'm just going to go back and keep using Maya until I don't need to do 3D anymore.
Did you hear that, Joe? Maya.
We actually called it Maya, but I'm assuming you Americans call it Maya.
We do. Yeah.
We call it Maya.
But I guess that's the thing, is it's no longer anywhere near as difficult. If you have After Effects, for example, which After Effects is not exactly cheap, but if you have After Effects, that comes with a light version of Cinema 4D, which is a really easy application to learn. Grayscale Gorilla is a blog that has lots and lots of tutorials for getting started, and most of those apply to the light version of Cinema 4D. Unfortunately, if you learn Cinema 4D, it's one of the most expensive softwares you can buy. But yeah, I feel like all over the industry, whether you're into 3D, whether you're into audio, whether you're into video, there are solutions that maybe they're not free, but they're not going to break the bank if you're trying to get started in a career.
It's kind of a hard thing, because one of the things that I found with, I actually started with Freehand before Adobe bought it and killed it, burned it with fire. It was sad. And it's still better. There's people out there. There are actually people out there who maintain old computers so they can continue working with Freehand because it's not supported on the latest versions of like Windows and whatnot. there's still some things it does better than Adobe Illustrator does as far as how it handles vectors and things like that. And there's some stuff that's super archaic in it, but, I am not among those people. I haven't used it in years and years, but I was really, really sad when they bought it because I thought they were going to, okay, now they can take all this stuff that they do better than Illustrator and they can merge those two together. I kind of didn't understand how code bases work. I kind of thought that, you know, you could just do it and you apparently either can't or it's incredibly difficult.
You just take the two floppy disks and you smash them together.
That's such a technological explanation there. Just
smush them together, you know? You got two code bases, one in each hand. Now clap. Anyway, so one of the free things that I used when I didn't have access to the Creative Suite, which I have access to it now through work, is Inkscape. So Inkscape's a really neat little vector illustration program. It's a competitor to Adobe Illustrator, and it has some really neat capabilities. It actually does some things that some of my other software, paid software packages, don't do very well. And I think, you know, actually, what we're coming across here is kind of a common theme that I'm seeing amongst all of these, is that the free or very, very inexpensive or free software that you find, and I think one of the reasons that David and I have been mentioning the iPad is the iPad seems to be kind of breaking that rule, is if it's very free or inexpensive for professional type use, then it's going to have a terrible interface. And I think that's something that the iPad is kind of bringing a little bit of a different flavor to, is that you can get, you know, a $10 to $40 program. The most expensive, you know, the programs on that I use on my iPad are $50, which is expensive for an iPad piece of software, by the way. But those are the most expensive things that I use on the iPad. And a lot of things that I use on there are, I mean, like Procreate is an excellent raster drawing program. So kind of like think of drawing with Photoshop. It's an excellent, excellent program for that. And it's $10. And you own it forever, you know, until they decide that they need to do a full like iteration and have like a paid update. But the paid updates are always going to be a different piece of software. And you will still have the one that you paid for.
It's such an awkwardly weird play on words, though, the name of that app.
Yeah, Procreate. It's really Believe weird me. when you go to YouTube and you start to search for Procreate tutorial, and you're like, I guess I should probably be more specific here.
There's been a few people that have made plays on that because I have 7 kids. Anyways, I'm pretty great with Procreate. But yeah, it's definitely a little awkward. Where was I going with this? Anyway, so where the point that I was going to make here is, aside from the really bad interfaces, which to me, as Christian designers, coders, things like that, it might be one of those things where if we want those things to be better, maybe we should reach out to those people that are doing those things and then see if we can help contribute. Hey, could we make your UI and UX actually work? Could we help you with that? The other side of that is, I've noticed, I called into a design, or they had a design podcast that I was listening to that you could leave a voicemail. And so I touched base with them and had some questions with them about Inkscape. And all these guys, these are like pro designers. They have their own design firms. They have, you know, they're movers and shakers in the, you know, LA and New York scene. And none of them had heard of Inkscape, and also none of them had heard of Affinity Designer. Now, this was probably 2 years ago. So Affinity Designer has some more mindshare now than it did back then, but they hadn't heard of either of those things. And they were just kind of like essentially mocking them. And if you were to come to our firm with a great portfolio, but you said, here's the software that I use to create that, this is the stuff that I know. Mm. If you don't know Creative Cloud, we can't hire you, essentially. They said, basically, you have to find a way to get access to it, learn it, and then you can have that on your resume, and then you can be talking about doing a real design job. I was like, wow. So there is some senses in which we're, you know, these things are getting democratized, in that there's some really vibrant communities around some of these free and inexpensive software, especially outside of the United States, where, you know, we kind of like, oh yeah, it's just a $10 piece of software, no big deal. And yet in some countries they're like, $10, you know, I kind of want to, you know, pay rent this month.
I can understand that from like the company position of, you need to know Adobe Creative Suite. I can understand that if it's a big business and there's lots of people working on files and you're going to need to, you know, get files in from clients and edit them, or even just transfer files between employees in the same workplace and stuff like that. But if you're coming on board as like the sole designer, or if it's a small team and you don't need to do that as much, and you can just output finished products, then there's absolutely, like, I can't really see any good argument as to why it should matter what something was created in. If it meets the design brief, then why worry about sort of whether or not the person is up to speed on the what would be considered the industry standard? If the skills that they have are able to produce the same quality of work with a different tool, then surely that's what's important in that situation. But I can see a situation where, for example, the argument that you must have Adobe Creative Suite skills is still certainly
I think,
valid.
I really do think that has changed even over the in the couple of years since that particular interchange happened with those designers.
Yeah.
But I would also say, and I have said to aspiring designers when I've talked to people in person and they're like, well, I can't afford this, that, or the other, then I say, then get the tool you can use or can afford.
Yeah.
And get out there and start making great, you know, doing great work. And then
I've heard you say that on Helvetic.
Yeah. And if you were to apply for a position and they say, well, you don't know Creative Suite, you could say, yeah, but this has a terrible interface and I taught myself to do this great work with it. So you know that I can do the work. You're right. I might take a little bit of time to be up to the point of doing it quickly in Creative Suite at your firm, but you know I can learn it and do it because I can show you that with this other stuff that doesn't do it as well or easily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there's two sides to learning any creative trade. There's the side of learning the tools, and then there's the side that I've been, I guess, more interested in lately, which is learning the craft, maybe. Most of which, honestly, is learning to see. Like if you're learning to draw, there are all these things like what kinds of pencils produce what kinds of lines, or what kind of pens produce what kinds of lines, and how to mix color and all of that. But then there's this other whole thing of like, how do you get a thing in your head? And this even happens with audio and with video. Like, how do you get a thing in your head and then make it happen regardless of the tools that you're using? And I think that where the democratization is occurring, it's not necessarily in anybody can learn a piece of software and then get a job at a company with that software, but anybody can start to learn, I guess, to become an artist with those tools. And I think that's honestly the harder part. Like, it's not hard to learn Photoshop. It's hard to learn that just, you know, plastering, you know, just copying and pasting Donald Trump's face onto Arnold Schwarzenegger's body and not even bothering to rotate it doesn't actually make it look like he's the person you're trying to Photoshop. Like, the learning to see the angles and the light and learning all of that is the really hard thing. That's the thing that takes like a decade to get like really good at. And you can get started with that with Affinity Photo and create works that are just as good. And now, just as, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? Like the difference between GIMP and Photoshop, or the difference between, take GIMP and Photoshop. The difference for me was always, besides the difficulty, in GIMP, it might take you 15 steps to do something that in Photoshop takes you 2. And in Photoshop, the work was non-destructive. So if you want to go back and say, oh, I blurred this too much, you can just adjust a slider later. Whereas in GIMP, it's like, well, I've got to go back 15 steps and redo all of those 15 steps.
I hope I saved my source file.
Yeah. I remember having like 30 layers because I needed 15, and 15 of them were turned off and they were just the original state of a layer before I made changes to it. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that the democratization here isn't necessarily of every aspect of being a digital creative, but it's of the things that I think matter the most, because I think more of being a good creative is the craft and less of it is knowing the tools. And again, if all you're ever looking to do is freelance or create your own stuff, just for yourself, then it's entirely, you know, you could do everything you would ever need to do in Photoshop pretty much in Affinity Photo, for example.
Yeah, yeah, I'm just looking at Affinity Photo now, having not looked at it since it came out. I think that came out before Designer, right?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was the first one out.
Yeah, and I think at the time I was like, oh, this looks good. I even downloaded a trial and then was like, I don't want to pay for something else. because I was already using, like, I already had, I bought the CS4 production premium suite. And even that, I think you could argue democratization, like we're talking about, has kind of, I'm assuming or sort of guessing that may have fueled Adobe's change in plans in how they operate, because they have gone from hugely expensive one-off costs and then paid upgrades to monthly subscription costs with, you know, ongoing upgrades, I guess, as part of the subscription.
Yeah.
And so that has kind of, even that sort of segment of the industry has changed. But I'm looking at it now going, you know, I once paid $2,500 for my Adobe CS4 production premium. And then I got really, really angry when Adobe was saying, no, we're switching, you know, from CS6 onwards or whatever, we're switching to a subscription model. So now you get to pay every month instead of just this one-off thing. And I was like, but I've already paid the one-off thing. Like, why do you want more of my money? And so now that I'm not, you know, now that I have, I use the latest and greatest at work, I'm thinking, like David just said, when I'm doing stuff at home for myself in terms of photo editing and stuff like that, I can't see any good reason for holding off on something like Affinity Photo at the price point that it's at.
Right.
And to have essentially the same, you know, like we've just been talking about, to have essentially the same power in a different, it might mean I have to learn a different way of doing things, but if the outcome is going to be the same and the cost is so much cheaper, it's sort of the ongoing cost I'm talking about, then it does seem, in some ways, I'm almost not even annoyed anymore at Adobe's subscription model because there are other options that are credible options that can take the place of that if you're not up for that sort of style of monthly billing and whatever, ongoing payments for something that you've always already owned.
Yeah, I think the like Photoshop and a lot of this really expensive software that the creators only really ever intended to be purchased by enterprise kind of like pushed a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't steal into essentially stealing their software. And it's kind of it's a weird interest. Like I'm a Calvinist. I believe in total depravity. But I also believe that, like, given the choice between stealing and paying a reasonable price for something, most people will pay the reasonable price for something. Like,
yeah, that's right.
Like, there's the dregs of humanity who will steal no matter what, even if they have the money and even if it's dirt cheap.
Listen, we can hear you. Okay, I mean, I'm right here.
But it's really interesting because now I think a lot of, in the 3D world, a lot of people are calling this the indie model, like the we have indie pricing, and it's basically like Houdini is a really interesting example. Houdini's 3D software that is harder to learn than Blender because you're sort of learning, like, it's kind of like if somebody said, oh, you want to use a word processor? Here's Visual Basic. Let's build a word processor. But anyway, Houdini is, it's crazy powerful because of that, because you can just build things to do whatever you need them to do. It's like $200 a year for indie pricing, which is less than, well, I guess it's a little bit more than you would pay for Photoshop, but it's way more powerful than Photoshop too.
And a second, word processing. Have you ever tried Emacs?
I've tried Apache OpenOffice.
Emacs.
Have you ever tried Nano? Because if you're going to do word processing, I recommend Nano.
Scrivener.
I have another example of this democratization in action, and that's with my wife's business. She runs a business called Doorpost Designs. She does, through this business, she does some teaching of hand lettering, and she also sells products. And basically, this thing started, she got back into hand lettering, and this whole thing started because she got an iPad Pro with an Apple Pencil and just, like, I guess rediscovered a love for hand lettering that she had forgotten about. And it's really quite amazing because not only, I mean, the iPad Pro at the time was pretty expensive, so it wasn't really a cost thing, but it was more like she can have her iPad with her anywhere. You know, we can be sitting on the couch watching The Office and she can be doing work that she's going to make money off of. I look at that and I'm like, that would have never happened if we would have needed to invest $2,000 in a Cintiq, or if the iPad didn't exist, honestly, because she wouldn't, even if we had bought the Cintiq, she wouldn't have been practicing and working on her hand lettering as much as she has. And it's all largely free or not free software, but cheap software. You know, she bought Procreate and she bought Affinity Designer and another app I'm forgetting the name of. And that's
Sketches or something. Yeah.
What's that?
Tsui Sketches or something like that.
Yeah, Tsui. That's yeah. The one. And that's where she makes a lot of the money that she's making for her business. And then now she wants to get into making YouTube videos, and she's going to be using her iPhone for a lot of that stuff. That's something that she already had. I mean, sure, it's a cost if you don't have an iPhone, but starting a business doing creative things is just a lot cheaper and a lot easier.
So she's not going to be using like a Sony Alpha 7 II with fancy microphone.
She will
and a pop
be using the A7 III for well, I guess it's our A7 III, but she will be using that for some shots. But honestly, the reason she wants to use her iPhone is because she can just pull it out and start recording. We have a little lav mic that she can plug into it, and lav mics are on Amazon for like $10.
Yeah, they're cheap. Her stuff looks really good. And now that we've given her business name and said how good it is, thanks to DoorPost Designs for sponsoring this week of Tech Reformation.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. You need to cut all that out unless she's willing to pay up.
It was a joke.
Yeah, 100%.
But if she wants to pay us, it doesn't have to be a joke. I wasn't joking that it looks good. It does look good.
Yeah, I'll say it looks good too if she's paying. No, her stuff is really pretty. It's really nice, actually.
I have been... Joe, I'm stealing this from you. But Joe, I have been using Procreate a lot more lately. It's actually like really handy. Like you said, I think it's
$10. That's a great piece of software.
Incredible piece of software. And they just keep adding features to it. Like now... For most of the drawing things, it's at full parity with Photoshop. Like it doesn't have like all of the tools that Photoshop has, because Photoshop lets you do crazy things like HDR image, you know, merging and ridiculous stuff that you'll never need to do with a drawing app. But for drawing, it's got the only thing I wish it had at this point is adjustment layers. Once it gets adjustment layers, it will be for anything where you're just drawing, it will be the perfect Photoshop replacement.
Nice.
Really better than Affinity Photo
for a pure drawing experience.
For drawing, yeah.
For drawing. Okay, yeah.
Pure drawing. Well, and this is that's the caveat.
This is kind of an interesting.
It's not a photo editor. It's not.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is kind of an interesting point. It's that like one of the reasons these apps are so cheap is that oftentimes they're segmented, which is kind of useful because if you pay the $120 or whatever it is a year for Photoshop, and you're just trying to learn to become a digital painting artist. You're paying for a lot of features that you will never, ever use. You might be better off with Autodesk Sketchbook or some other alternative. But like, I think part of this is the iOS influence, where on iOS, mostly you have apps that do one thing and do it really well. And I think that's actually better for users, because you can pay for, it's kind of a la carte. You can pay for only what you need.
Yeah. So for me, one that I'd bring up, I think I brought this up recently. I think I've brought this up on TechRef. I'm kind of a popular guy. So
one of your nine other podcasts.
One of my nine other podcasts. Yeah. No, I'm not on any other podcasts right now. But is Figma. It's a drawing app called a design app called Figma. And it's a if you're familiar with Sketch or Adobe XD, it's gonna be a competitor to those. And we have started using it where I work, and I've started using it. Actually, I used it. I'm the one who mentioned it to people here at my work because I was using it for some personal design things. And I found that it was really a real solid competitor to Sketch. And it actually, it's an interesting kind of democratization, because it runs in, they have an app you can download. The app runs on Windows or Mac or, don't know if the app runs on Linux. It might. They might have a Linux version. I can't recall. But what it does do is it runs in the browser. So if you have Chrome or Firefox, it actually runs in Safari and like Edge and later versions of Explorer. It'll run in any of those browsers. And so
Edge, love that.
Yeah. What I'm saying is, if you have a modern web browser, it'll run in those. If you have a mobile device, it won't run on those, which is crazy. I'm like, oh, Safari for iPad. I have an iPad Pro. I got a Pencil. It's going to be great. And then it won't. It just uses it as a kind of a viewer, kind of like a sketch mirror sort of a thing. So you can view the files on the device, so see how they look on device, which is nice. And then I tried it with Windows Surface Go, which is a 10-inch Windows Surface that has a Surface Pen and everything with it. And then I realized why it doesn't work on a mobile platform. It's really designed to be used with a mouse. So if you connect a mouse to that Surface, that device, it works pretty fine. But if you don't have a mouse connected and you're trying to use a pen with this OS that does support the app, it's just a hot mess. It's terrible. But it was really nice to use this and be able to go from my computer that I have at home to my office computer to a PC that I have at home to this Surface Go. I can run on any of those platforms. And when I'm logged in, it just sees all my files. It's good to go. I can use them. They're all stored. It's all cloud storage. You can export to local for doing handoff to customers and stuff, but you can also give them viewing capabilities and give developers viewing capabilities into this, and they can download it themselves. They can't edit it, but they can download the resources if you've set them up to export. So it's a really cool little system, and we're kind of going full steam ahead with it at the office. And I've been using it for design type stuff, and there's certain design things that'll work really well with it. It's not a raster type editor, like a Photoshop type editor at all. It's not for that. But
it's really for interface design, right?
Great for interface design. It's great for graphic design, web design, things like that. It's very nice. It's called Figma.
I need to give it a shot for web design.
It's free for 1 to 2 people can actually be editors on it for free. And then you start getting into bigger teams, and they charge, I think it's like $12.99 a month or $15 a month, depending on if you do per year or per month. And then if you go to their enterprise level setup, it's like $45 a month. It's crazy. Like, what? Wait, what happened? It doesn't make any sense to me. But
we only make $45 million a year. How can we afford this?
Yeah, exactly. I don't understand. But it is. It's really expensive, honestly. Once you switch over to enterprise, it's like, hey, that's money. That's a lot of money. Stop that.
All right, Craig, you got anything?
I use this software called Photoshop.
Oh, deep. Is that like an indie thing?
Yeah. No, it's by this company called Adobe. And I think they've been around for a few years. Yeah, no, I am pretty much cemented in the Adobe suite just because of work and working alongside people who use that and needing to use the same files and stuff. So I must admit I've been out of the world of alternative software for a little while, but it's something that, like I said, I'm sort of keen to get back into because my home install of Adobe CS4 is starting to freak out.
Yeah.
When I open Photoshop, I get this red flashing bar across the bottom of the screen about 10 pixels high. And I think that means this is not going to cooperate with your operating system for much longer. It feels like it means.
One thing I'll say about Photoshop and the whole democratization of tech that we've been talking about here is the fact that Adobe has that $10 a month Photoshop plan. Photoshop and Lightroom for $10 a month, which is still, that's not cheap. That's $120 a year. I'm good at math. But it's
depending on the length of the year. Yeah.
Considering how nice, considering how expensive Photoshop was, the fact that they're saying, okay, this is our single most popular app and you can get this one just by itself
with Lightroom
for $10 a month is pretty cool.
My problem is that my background has primarily been like I use Photoshop heavily. Like I've always used Photoshop heavily. But my background is also in video production. So Premiere Pro and After Effects are kind of at least, if not Audition or Sound Booth, are kind of also fairly absolute requirements. And so, there's not as good alternatives for those. And by the time you add those into your $10 photography subscription, you're up to $50 a month or something like that. So
I did the same thing as I looked at getting Photoshop for that, and then just doing a single just Adobe Illustrator. Then I was like, well, I kind of need InDesign for the stuff that I'm doing. And then
it quickly adds up.
Yeah. It, once you get one more, you, if you have one more software, you can do an individual software plus the Lightroom package, and you're cheaper than their monthly cost. But if you have two things plus Lightroom, then it's just you pay the whole monthly thing. I think they have that on sale right now until March. Ooh, it might even be, I don't know if it's today. I think it might be like till March 3rd or 4th or something that they have it on sale where it's like $39 a month for the whole suite for everything for the next year instead of,
that's cool.
Instead of $59 a month, which is what it's gone up to.
Yeah.
Craig, have you used Lightroom on your iPad at all?
No, I did take to using Lightroom on my iMac for a while. I was trying to sort of cut back on my Photoshop usage because of the red flashing bar. So I switched to Lightroom. No, I haven't really tried it on the iPad, I must admit.
There's now two Lightrooms. There's Lightroom CC and Lightroom something CC. One's the old version and the other is, it looks like it's sharing the same code base as the iOS app.
Oh yeah.
So there's Lightroom CC and Lightroom Classic CC. Yeah. I've been using Lightroom CC. I have a bunch of presets that I bought from VSCO for Lightroom, which now they don't make anymore. I managed to bring those over to my Lightroom, like cloud Lightroom CC. And so now I have all of that on my iPad. And I basically use my iPad exclusively for like regular, like if I do an engagement shoot with a couple or a wedding, I use that to edit all the photos because it has the best screen that I own. I can do the editing anywhere. I have the Apple Pencil for doing finer adjustments with the, you know, targeted adjustment or whatever. And it's faster than on my Mac.
Wow.
Which okay, I so can't he, figure out. Cool.
So here's my question, which stems from my problem with switching to iPad, because I've thought about doing that as well a few times because things are cheaper and whatever. Plus, it's more portable and all sorts of benefits. But file management and storage and stuff, how do you do that on an iPad with something like still photography where the photos are like 25 meg each or
whatever? I have a big iPad, like a large amount of storage, but the trick is to just to think of your local storage, no matter how much space you have, think of your local storage as like, this is for what I'm working on now, and then everything else just lives in the cloud and you download it when you need it. And which cloud you want to use is entirely up to you. You can scatter things across multiple clouds if you're trying to stay free. You could have Dropbox, Google Drive, and you know some maybe the $3 tier on iCloud or however you want to do that. Because the Files app actually does make that fairly, now with like iOS 11 and 12, fairly seamless.
Yeah, you can actually browse for files now, which is way different than it was before.
It actually was.
Can you in iCloud download more than one photo at a time?
You mean in iCloud Photos, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because the trick is to try to use the application in such a way that you're saving to files and you're bypassing photos as much as you can. I'm pretty convinced that iOS 13 is going to be a big deal for a lot of this stuff. I think we're going to get the ability to use like external storage devices and what have you. But even if I'm wrong, like it's workable. I just did family photos for some relatives. And I took the photos, then I went back to the place I was staying. I loaded them up on the iPad. I did the edits. And the longest part was actually trying to find a way to export them to a folder altogether because Lightroom was kind of finicky about exports at the time. But ultimately, I did get it done. And they looked as good as they would have if I had done them on my computer. Okay, so I'm going to wrap up with a couple more quick recommendations. Craig, you were talking about Premiere and After Effects. I suggest trying DaVinci Resolve 15. Have you tried that?
No, I've heard a lot about DaVinci Resolve, but I've never actually dug into it.
There's a free version. DaVinci Resolve is like it started as like a Premiere competitor, but they just merged Fusion into it. Fusion is an After Effects competitor and it's node-based, which some people like better. I think I like better. If I'm doing something quick and simple, I still like After Effects because I'm not as comfortable with it. But it's really good. There's a free version that does a ton and it's worth checking out. Another one is LumaFusion for iPad for video editing. That's a pretty cheap app that does tons and tons of video stuff. You can apply LUTs. You can do basic color correction. It's a non-linear editor like Premiere. Does a lot of that stuff. I think it's better by far than Project Rush, which is Adobe's new attempt to bring Premiere to the iPad. I mentioned Blender. Blender 2.8 is much easier to use. It's still in beta right now. But between Cycles, which is the ray tracing engine for super high quality renders, which can run on multiple machines, like you can bring multiple machines together to render, which you would have to pay for multiple licenses of with other software. Between that and Eevee, which is kind of a game like rendering engine where it uses the kinds of tricks that video games use to do your renders, I think it's going to be a really big competitor to 3D Studio Max, Maya, etc. In the next couple of years here, and it might be worth learning. I think it is worth learning if you're getting into 3D stuff.
Cool.
Joe, did you have any others? Because I was thinking of just wrapping up with Slack feedback.
No, I think that's good for now. Yeah.
Okay. I'm sure that if we thought about it, we could come up with even more. I know I could. I feel like I use my iPad almost as much as my Mac for things these days. But what we want to do is hear from you guys. So if you would like to join in on the conversation, you can head over to slack.techreformation.com, create an account, and we would love to hear from you.
Yeah, for sure. It's a fun, pretty vibrant community in there. I really enjoy it, actually. And you could go to twitter.slack.techreformation.
Somebody just give them a website. Oh my gosh.
And if you head to techreformation.com, you can look through our back catalog and find an episode that interests you and share it with someone else and make them be interested in it too.
Yeah.
Make them.
Yeah, force them to.
or just offer it to them. And if they say no, that's okay.
You know, just give them the free will to choose whether they want to.
Oh dear. None of our wills are truly free, Joe. Come on. Well, not autonomously free anyway.
This has been techarminification.com.
Has this been derailed enough for you yet, David?
This has been the Tech Reformation. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you again next week.